Are you enjoying this?
No, on the contrary. Take it as a compliment. You're a bright young man. This monkey business is in your blood, under your skin. You're not getting out, you're just getting in. You're only getting started. I've every faith in you. And one day in the future, it'll be you sitting here in my place, telling some young Turk the facts of life.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of The Subbeacon, sponsored by Gabby and DoorDash. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Sonny Bunch and Jonathan V. Last. Just a reminder, The Subbeacon is available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Look at our podcast and search for Subbeacon. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. Gentlemen, how are we? How is your week's off? How are your week off?
How was your week's? I'm just... It was funny. I haven't done a podcast for 2 weeks now, which is the longest I have gone without doing a podcast.
What happens when you don't do a podcast?
I don't know.
You get shakes. The shakes.
I get my brain like freezes up. I don't know what to do with myself.
The cold sweats. The night sweats.
I don't know what's going on.
They gotta strap you down and put a diaper on. That's what they do at the rehab center.
Yeah, it's very weird.
Do you even know what to talk about anymore? If you're not doing a podcast, when you interact with your wife and your children, do you just find yourself with no material?
Between the movie release schedule being in such flux and no podcasts, I just don't understand what's happening in the world anymore. I'm totally unmoored.
Oh, that's cute.
I'm floating through time, so to speak.
That's very cute. The movie schedule is in flux. Mm. What a charming euphemism.
Yeah. It was funny. Somebody left a review on our iTunes page saying that, you know, the show has taken a turn during the quarantine, that we're much more downbeat. And, you know, Sonny in particular has become such a sad sack and hard to listen to. Which, you know what? This person was right. I lost his job.
I had a rough couple weeks
at work. You know, there's this global pandemic thing. But yeah, this person is totally right. I need to be more. Hold on. There's a notice on my phone here that a Washington Post reporter is saying that Tenet probably isn't coming out until the middle of August now. And
bad news piled upon, I can't do it.
How are we going to get through this, guys? Guys, when does it end? When does the world get better? I don't think it's gonna. I don't think we're done.
I feel like we're all together in February in the offices of the Washington Free Beacon, and I came in with my gloves and my goggles and my mask,
and you guys survived.
Made fun of me.
I told you
everything was changed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I said, you guys don't understand. Mm-hmm. The whole world has changed, and you both laughed at me.
I do, and I continue to laugh at you because I never changed, and I'm still alive.
Yeah, I haven't really changed that much. I'm just here in Texas.
When I go to the theater, I'm going to take that mask off and go, ah.
There is a theater near me that has opened, the Cinemark 17, showing Blade Runner amongst other movies. I may go to the movies tomorrow. Who knows?
The original, the final cut.
Which cut?
The final cut. I think
that's too long. You'll probably get it. You'll get the virus. It's too long, that movie.
Well, I looked at the seating chart. Zero tickets have been sold for that 1 p.m. showing.
The strategy, you think? I think the strategy is...
sit in the back.
Okay. All right. You know what?
Isn't that
where the air recirculates to?
Yeah, exactly. Doesn't it like
So this is an actual thing that would be useful, is having one of these like fluid dynamics people that you're so enthralled by, JBL, do like a story about like where the best place to sit in an airplane, in a movie theater, in a restaurant. Do you want to sit
near the door? But if you're near the door, people are coming through.
If you're near the walls, though, the air comes down onto you, right? Shouldn't you be in the middle?
No, because then there are people behind you breathing on you. This is what I'm saying.
It rises, doesn't it?
These are small bits of particulate which go out and then are pulled by gravity back down to the ground, right? Unless they are caught up in the airflow and the recirculation, which I think in theaters is probably... Well, who knows? I don't know. I assume
it's a totally enclosed space.
It is a totally enclosed space, which is why if you want to be safer, you should be in the very, very back.
Okay.
With a tent over you
with like a little hood, like a beekeeper hood on.
And don't watch a comedy where people are like, ha ha. You know, watch something very, watch something boring like Widows or
somber. Watch something somber.
if they put Widows back in theaters, you could watch that. Somber. That's right. Okay. Well, we'll. I don't get to that later on, or if we can get to it now. I do have. You want to talk about theaters now, or just. As a separate
no, I want
thing.
To talk about your Connecticut holiday.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Did you go to the yacht club?
No, he's no longer a member.
Did you go yachting?
We actually...
Up with the Connecticut Dwyers?
We played. I played with my father-in-law, Dr. Bob Dwyer, at Fenwick. But that is a public course.
Did he save anybody's lives while you were out on the links?
No, but it was amazing because it's like this... It's like Brigadoon or something. It's this magical... You know, little world, this little town that you feel like you're being transported in time to the 20s. In fact, the green fees were $20 for 9 holes, and it was a public course. But it is like a time warp, and it's like this little community that hasn't changed. It's probably why they looked at me very strangely. In my garb. I mean, the way I was dressed, you know. Why is he dressed like that? Why are there so many pockets?
Did somebody give you drink orders?
Yeah, wash his balls. But it's a really interesting, fancy part of. I even asked my father. I said, "Well, you grew up here. He go to Fenwick?" He goes, "No." He said there was never a reason to be allowed to go to Fenwick. Katharine Hepburn's house is there, and we played right past it on one of the greens. That house is currently listed at $14 million. Oof. But it was
on a public course,
right on a public course, on the other side of it.
But how are the really how are the house, greens? How are the greens fees only $20 on this course?
Yeah, pandemic, I guess. But the but that's the house that the whole family lived in. Like,
do they have gates 3 miles out along the roads to keep the brown people out?
It's not like a golf community where you're right by there and you might accidentally hit it. Although I could, the way I hit. But, you know, it's along the fairway, so it's on the side and it's facing the water, which means it is in constant danger of hurricane, you know. Peril. Apparently the whole Hepburn family lived there, and she like supported like the whole, you know what I mean? Like everybody was, her father was a urologist. So, I mean, there was family money and stuff, but the, but obviously with her career, she could, you know, the whole, it was like a giant.
So
like,
she was also the child of a doctor
she
like
was,
you.
Yes.
And she
was.
Went on to become one of the most
Kate.
Celebrated.
And her name was Kate.
Celebrated stars of the That's silver
right.
screen.
That is right.
And you also the child of a doctor. I mean, look, Kate Hepburn didn't go to Georgetown, did she?
No, I wonder where she went to. Probably, I don't know where she went to, but we played right by there, which was great. And then, before I get to that, I was going to say, you know how long it took me to get from Arlington to Connecticut?
Hold on. Don't. I'm doing the math. 6 hours.
On the nose, JVL. On the nose. Technically,
that was my real time traffic, like the Google real time traffic analysis, calculating.
You did it in your brain, and it was 5.5 hours, but there were 3 rest stops. The sad part is it had nothing to do with the kids, it was all my bladder. You know, when your kids are young, like your kids, there's always, you got to stop for this, you got to stop for that. Somebody's got a diaper changes or whatever. And now I'm the one with the diaper. No. I'm the one that has to be like, okay, who needs to stop? I know you got to pee. No. Oh, okay. You know, and then we go a little bit further. I'm like, why are my kidneys hurt? My kidneys are hurting.
We got to get gas. We just got gas an hour ago.
Come on, don't you feel that urge, as Dan Aykroyd says, a spies like us, in the inner wall of your bladder? Don't you feel the urge, you know? And so we had to stop 3 times. And it's like, and once you open the spigot, you know, then it's like, oh, we got to go again. But you know what?
Which stops did you make?
Ah, you know what that means. Great segue, JVL.
This is what I want to know.
Get ready for
Delaware.
This.
Did you stop at the Biden Center in Delaware?
Get ready for this. I have for you today, rest stop rankings, coronavirus edition.
Yes.
Top 5. Actually, the only 5. I went to 5 different rest stops, round back and forth. Each time is about 6 hours, by the way. And I have ranked them for you and for our listeners from worst to best. Or do you want best to worst?
Worst to best.
Okay, worst to best. Number 5. Maryland House. Maryland House. You know the one near Harvard of Grace?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Harvard of Grace. Even the rebuilt Maryland House, don't love it.
Yeah.
So you're don't going, love it. If you're going down 95, that's the last one for another stretch.
So when we were kids, Victorino, yes. I don't know if you remember this, mm-hmm. But the Maryland house had something I have never seen anywhere else in my life. It was a comic book vending machine.
You just
put three quarters in it, and you chink the three quarters, and it just spit a comic book out totally at random. And when I saw that was the great. I used to look forward to stopping at the Maryland house just to make use of the comic book vending machine.
I actually made a joke because I was there, and I'm there with my son, and you get out of the restroom, but I said, "Hey, you want one of those? Look, you could get free. You could get, you know, the vending machine has like the ice cream, like Dots. Is it Dots? What are the
Dippin' Dots?
Dippin' Dots. Yeah, you want some Dippin' Dots? Because what? The thing is empty, but I thought it was funny to look at. Like somebody like would be insane enough to actually do that. we got there around noon. It was already a bit of a mob scene. People are out and about. You know what the other thing is? You know what's bad when there are food lines, not just for Wendy's, but for the Burrito Brothers place and Phillips Seafood. You know,
busy.
You want seafood at the rest stop. You know what?
So, okay, hold on. Mm-hmm. The Phillips Seafood at the rest stop, and I believe there's fried. Also one at the Delaware. If all you're getting is a crab cake, it's just a frozen crab cake the way you would get from the grocery store they sort of pop on a griddle.
I would get
that is perfectly
clam
fine.
Strips. I would get clam strips. Okay. I love clam strips. Okay. Number four, Montvale on the Garden State Parkway. Coming down because we took the tap, the Mario Cuomo Bridge, the tap and Z. And it is the first rest stop of the Garden State Parkway at the very top of the state. And it's Montvale.
I have never stopped there.
It is like 2 miles into the parkway. And it is Montvale.
You come off the tap, 287, and then you hit the parkway?
Boom, it's right there.
Sonny, are you loving this segment?
Well, is that the one that's near Meadowlands?
No. You're on the turnpike. You're on a whole different side.
Oh, that's
the turnpike.
Can we mute him, Vic?
Yes. This is the Garden State Parkway, which you have to take if you're coming down from the tap or the Cuomo. And Montvale.
Did they rename the Tappan Zee Bridge?
Yes, they did.
The Mario Cuomo Bridge?
They named it the Chris Cuomo Bridge.
Oh, stop.
Yes, the Mario Cuomo. You know what the problem with Montvale was? The bathroom wet floor.
Oh.
You never know. Is it mopping wet floor? Why is it particularly wetter around the urinal? Okay, that was one thing. The other weird thing, there was nobody there, which is always that. There was nobody there except for one old man with no mask inside sitting on the coin-operated massage chair.
What?
I wanted to go. I'm like, what are you doing here? Maybe he lives in Montvale. He's like, I just want to use the chair. I don't know. Okay. Number three is Branford in Connecticut. It's very quaint, like all of Connecticut, and it's small. It's of course there's
is that on the Merit?
No, on 95. Also, okay. It's usually the worst 95 in Connecticut, but again, because of the situation, there was a lot of traffic, but it was flowing. And of course, there's a Dunkin' Donuts because there's a Dunkin' Donuts in every rest stop in Connecticut.
Is this before or after Stamford?
After. Okay. After, so it's like Stamford, Bridgeport, and somewhere
else. The traffic around Stamford is always murder. Mm-hmm.
New Haven, too, but you never probably have to go that far. Okay.
We might actually be able to kill Sonny with this ranking.
I see. Sonny, 15 more minutes. Number two, Delaware. You are right, JVL.
The Biden. And the Biden is awesome.
I knew
the President Biden rest stop.
It was already refurbished and new prior to the pandemic, so I figured how much more, right? Okay. And number one, Grover Cleveland on the New Jersey Turnpike, just before you enter New York. There's one more rest stop on the Turnpike before Grover Cleveland, before you enter New York, and that would be Vince Lombardi. Lombardi was closed. Grover Cleveland.
Lombardi's terrible.
Yes, it was closed. Grover Cleveland. Because I had to go.
Had they redone it? Because they've been redoing all of these rest stops.
Maybe.
Have they done Grover Cleveland yet?
I normally don't go there at all because I try to avoid North Jersey rest stops. They're not as clean as the South Jersey rest stops for whatever reason.
True.
But you know what?
Whatever reason. Because I have some reasons.
I'll tell you why. Because the great thing about the upside to the pandemic, they were like, well, I guess we're going to have to finally clean these stalls. For the first time in 5 years. Time to clean the urinal for the first time in 5 years. Okay, so it was really like expectations because I thought it was going to be bad. But not only was it not bad, it was spotless. So there you have it.
Can I give a little service for our listeners.
Yeah.
I'm reluctant to share this because I don't want to let slip a little secret here. But the other great thing about the Biden, the President Biden Memorial Rest Stop, is that they have a drive-through Starbucks.
Oh, yeah.
Did you notice
this? Yeah,
And it's hidden in the corner and nobody knows about it.
I got news for you, JVL. They all noticed it. The line was like miles.
But that's because the inside Starbucks is closed right now. In normal times, when the inside Starbucks is open, everybody goes to that Starbucks and you can just skip.
It would have been in like another hour.
Yeah,
but it's like that at all the Starbucks now. Okay, so the only thing I will add to this is that while I was in Connecticut, I got the gout. It came back.
Oh no!
And
flared up.
Did you get a picture?
This was really weird too. I thought I had sprained my foot, and it was like
I thought I sprained my foot while I was running.
Because it was a burning red sensation. Ready for this? In a whole new location.
Mm-hmm. Heel?
No, my genital. No, I'm just kidding. My left foot. It's normally my right foot right before the big toe. Instead, it was left foot right before the three middle toes, the joint knuckle, the whatever it is, the metatarsal, whatever it is. Metaphalangeal. It's right before.
All three of them?
Yes. In the middle, red, hot, and immediately, of course, my mother-in-law was like, it's all the martinis you and my father-in-law have been drinking. And I said, no, that I don't think so. And she said, maybe it's all the beer, because it's true. I did have a lot of beer, right? I normally don't drink beer. And he's like, hey, you want a beer, you know, in the afternoon? How am I supposed to say no to that?
Can't say no.
Have a beer.
And be
beer,
rude. It would be
beer
rude
is
to say
very
no.
bad. I had some red wine. I did have some whiskey. But no, I look back. Diagnosis. Prior to the trip, we're cleaning dishes. And my daughter had a bowl of oatmeal, and she didn't finish it. And I was curious because I hadn't had oatmeal in a long time. I took a spoonful of the oatmeal. It was the oatmeal.
It wasn't the 17 different kinds of alcohol.
It wasn't the combination.
It wasn't
of spirits and liquors and beer. No.
It wasn't the 300 oysters you had probably had.
It was Quaker Oats.
How bad did it get? Did you go to DEFCON 1?
Yeah.
Did you head it off?
Did you get some cherry?
Cherry liquor? For a day, because I was working from Connecticut and I was able to use Captain Bill Dwyer's old bedroom as an office with a computer set up there. I had to prop my foot up on the desk, and I was just hobbling around for a day and drinking a lot of water, and next day was gone. So much so that I ran while I was in Connecticut. So it was really a miracle.
What does it mean as a medical matter to have had your gout move? Does this mean that you're basically going to die tomorrow?
Yeah, maybe. I've had it on the back of my heel. Some people get it like in their other joints, elbows, knees, which is really awful. This thing came, but then it left, you know? I mean, just drink water. And I mean, again, I ran 4 miles twice, I think. So, you know, I mean, while I was in Connecticut. And so I can't do more than that because I'm not changing my diet. This is as good as it gets. JVL, what's going on with you?
Nothing.
Okay. Yes. Well, I was going to say, and in that case, I was just very happy it was on my left foot. It's a good thing it was on the left foot, because if it was on the right foot, then that would have been a real pain having to drive down. Even if it was only 6 hours, using the right foot to drive would have been impossible. So speaking of driving, we're all looking for ways to save money, especially now. When's the last time you looked at how much you're spending every month on car insurance, on homeowners insurance? Now is the time to check out Gabby and see about getting a lower rate for the exact same coverage you already have. Gabby takes the pain out of shopping for insurance by giving you an apples-to-apples comparison of your current coverage with 40 of the top insurance providers like Progressive, Nationwide, and Travelers. Just link your current insurance account, and in about 2 minutes, you'll be able to see quotes for the exact same coverage you currently have. Gabby customers save $825 per year on average. If they can't find you savings, they'll let you know, so you can relax knowing you have the best rate out there, and they will never sell your info, so no annoying spam or robocalls. It's totally free to check your rate, and there's no obligation. Take 2 minutes right now to see how much you can save on your car and homeowner insurance. Go to gabby.com/subbeacon. That's gabi.com/subbeacon. gabby.com/subbeacon. box office thoughts.
Yeah, they officially Warner Brothers has officially delayed Tenet to August 12th. So I got no reason to go on.
That's it. That's it for you.
That's today. It. Just gonna crawl in a hole.
I see the box office. There's two horror movies up on Box Office Mojo. Yeah.
Well, it was funny. There was a JVL. You sent us this story, actually, didn't you? About the guys who made their own Zoom movie and then bought out a theater in New York City for the to have the number one highest grossing movie of the week. We should do that. We should just tape. We should just record this.
We could raise money for this. People would do it.
I should just tape this screen for the next hour. We can talk, and then we'll make a 1080, rip of it. We'll send it to some theater somewhere, and we'll buy all the seats. Have a nice little red carpet premiere. That'll give me something to do, you know. So anyway, those are my box office thoughts. Hold on one second.
The time is 20:08. I cannot hear JVL. Can you hear him, Sonny?
Yes. Sorry.
There we are. Hello.
I was muted during the ad read. For one day, on June 10th, 2020, the movie Unsubscribe was the number one movie in America with a gross of $25,488 because they rented out one entire theater, and that was enough to put them into first place over The Wretched.
The Wretched.
Yes. The Wretched. Which is making the drive-in circuit. That's an IFC movie.
Would you like to know what The Wretched's per theater average is?
Yeah. Sure.
Go ahead, guess. Just guess.
$500?
$227.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
Sure. I'm positive the Tenet will be in theaters on August 10th.
12th.
Whatever.
Theaters are reopening without masks. Wait, with masks. And the question is, are you going to go? And if so, what? JVO.
Nobody's going to go. Sonny. Nobody's going to
Sonny.
Go.
I'll go to a draft house on a midweek morning screening for something like Inception. I would do that. Fine. I'd do that.
Victorino.
I'm going to go, but it's going to depend, because if it's young people, I feel comfortable. If it's old people, then I am not going to go to the theater. So I'm going to, if they're reissuing that Hotel Marigold movie with Helen Mirren, that one, or the 70-foot journey or whatever, the movies that old people like, I'm not going to go to those because it'd be very dangerous.
No, but
for everybody involved.
Not for you.
Okay. For them. Maybe.
For them, because
I don't know.
Because you're just shedding disease.
But the thing is, yes,
everywhere you go,
clearly,
just like
clearly asymptomatic. But I might give it to other people who are asymptomatic, and on it goes. But in the theater, you can't stop people. They can pull. It's dark, right? People are going to let it slip.
Well, this is one reason why I would go to a draft house more than any other. I'm more likely to go to a draft house than other theaters, because draft house audiences are already conditioned to behave themselves in theaters. They don't
go ahead, say it.
They don't use cell phones.
I dare you to say it.
What? No, they look. They have prided themselves on conditioning an audience that respects the rules of movie going. Right, like no theater, no cell phones in theaters, no talking, no hooting and hollering at the screen.
Who would you say these audiences predominantly vote for?
I have no idea. I mean,
yeah,
I
no, who you, could say?
I mean, I don't think that Donald Trump voters are necessarily much more likely to be well behaved at the theaters than Joe Biden voters, frankly.
Bunch of affluent, college educated people who love cinema. Yeah, no, who could say who they vote for?
But this being the case, I am more likely to believe that a draft house theater audience is going to do things like wear their masks and not show up sick and coughing all over the place. I don't know. I mean, it is what it is. That said, I'm also not terribly scared of you know, going to a random theater at like 2 in the afternoon, which is when I go to movies now, like either like 2 in the afternoon on a Tuesday or like 10 p.m. on a Thursday. Whenever I go to the theater at those times, it is generally 95% empty anyway. I don't think it's going to be any less empty now. And a theater that's, you know, 95% empty, you're probably not going to catch anything because, you know, you're not going to be close enough to anyone. So,
you know, if you get your hands on an N95 respirator, you're good to go in a theater that is almost entirely empty with you, like you and two other people, and you're sitting far away from them and you're wearing not a mask, but an actual respirator, which is going to filter out virus particles. You're basically fine.
Yeah. So, I'm just gonna wear like a bandana around. I'm just gonna wrap a T-shirt around my mouth anyway.
20 feet away from you, I'm not scared about getting it. I'm just not. I go around everywhere here. Everybody's fine. I don't know anybody.
Nobody actually has this disease. Come on,
Come on.
It's all a hoax.
It's all a hoax.
Nobody has this disease.
In a nursing home, obviously, it's terrible.
If you're above the age of 60, you've got something to worry about. Frankly, you know.
Also, don't go
me. And I'm like, frankly, I've got less to worry about than you guys because I'm so much younger, more virile, and you know. Silly.
I'm not going to go see Cocoon. I'll tell you that much.
No, that's smart.
Don't see Cocoon. We have a movie of the week. That's what we do here now. And this movie
we've talked about it a lot.
JBL is your turn because I don't have access to it because my other files are in the office, but I don't think we've actually dedicated an actual episode to this movie.
We have talked about it in a previous episode about, I want to say, either Kingsman or Kingsman Golden Circle, possibly.
Yeah. Because, I mean, obviously, because this is a movie that came out before the Subbeacon Substandard. JVL, this was your turn to pick a movie, and you picked one.
The year is 2004. Matthew Vaughn, an upper-crust Brit with ties to royalty, is best known as the guerrilla producer of Guy Ritchie's gangster movies, including Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, and Snatch. Guy Ritchie acquires the J.J. Connelly book Layer Cake and is going to direct it, but then goes and does something else at the last minute. And so Matthew Vaughn makes his directorial debut with what is arguably the best movie of the 2000s, Layer Cake.
Very arguably.
There, we have just set the table. Sonny, would you like to give a big boy review? You watched it on glorious Blu-ray last night.
I did.
Was it your first time?
No. I own this movie on DVD, and I didn't want to watch it on DVD on my big TV.
Well, it would have hurt your eyes.
It just is. It's unpleasant. It's unpleasant to watch it. It had been on like Amazon Prime or Netflix for a while, which I had watched it relatively recently, last year, maybe on one of those services. So. I had not had reason to upgrade to the Blu-ray until this week. So thank you, JBL, for choosing this.
Did it go on your shelf?
Oh, I don't have shelves here yet. Oh. I've just got like it's the worst for now. I don't really want to do a big boy review of this, JBL. I think you should do the big boy review.
You're the one who has been. If we're catching you sort of off guard, I do want to also know. What was it that drew you to this movie? And did you actually see this movie in the theater?
I did, believe it or not. Wow. I saw this at E Street.
Lucky you.
I saw this at the E Street, the cinema. Now, Sonny, I don't do big boy reviews very well.
You didn't write about it, did you, JVL, at the Standard?
No, I don't think so. This is one of these movies that I have just been championing for 16 years now because it is an underappreciated absolute classic. But again, please, Sonny, would you do a big boy review for me? Don't make me do it. My thoughts about this are all too big to condense into a mere plot summary.
Okay, so Layer Cake stars Daniel Craig as a middleman gangster type who is into the low-level cocaine game in Great Britain. He has a small crew of thugs who he works with, including a very young Tom Hardy, in this movie. I don't think this is Tom Hardy's first movie, but it is. It's like certainly like I think his biggest exposure up to this point. And it is kind of amusing to see him. The first scene in which, by the way, he's wearing a mask. It like yes. sets the stage, oh, sets the stage for the whole Tom that's Hardy body of work. So it's Daniel Craig, who is working with Tom Hardy, a couple of other guys, Morty, played by George Harris, and Morty's, I don't know, muscle guy named Terry. And they are basically, let's see, I'm trying to think, there are two levels down from, the like head middleman. Their go-between is played by Colm Meaney, the great Colm Meaney, who is most people remember from Star Trek, The Next Generation, of course, as the transporter operator, Sergeant, what Chief O'Brien, is that? Was that Colm Meaney?
Yeah, anyway. That was Chief O'Brien.
Anyway, I'm getting like bogged down in the weeds because Layer Cake's a very fascinating movie because it's essentially a heist flick, right? And it is tricksy and turny and noirish in the way that very good crime heist flicks are. But the joy of this movie is not really the ins and outs and what have yous of the heist, which has to do with a million tabs of ecstasy that have been pilfered by this ridiculous person, the Duke, who you know just wants to be a gangster and wants to be flashy and all that. The lovely thing about this movie is just all of the little characters playing their little parts to make the whole thing tick like a clock. You know, this is Daniel Craig's first really big role. He's fantastic. Like I said, Colm Meaney's great in it. Tom Hardy's good. But it's these little flashes of characters like Crazy Larry, for instance. Crazy Larry is played by, hold on, Jason Fleming, thank you.
Who has one line in the whole movie.
He has one line in the whole movie, but he has an overweight presence in the middle of it, and his kind of garish persona in the middle distance through a bunch of scenes kind of like actually sets all of the everything in this movie into motion, and you don't realize that until like the third or fourth time you watch it.
Yes.
Like what exactly is the inciting incident of the whole movie? I don't know. It's a very clever and very compact and very complex movie that like hums along. It clocks in at a tight 105. It's a relatively short movie, an hour 45 minutes. You see something different every time you watch it, which is basically my last remaining hallmark for a great movie, is like every time I watch it, I see something new and interesting in it. I don't know. This is a terrible Big Boy review because I don't know how to like actually talk about this movie.
We didn't tell you.
You mentioned great little performances. My favorite of all the little performances is Stephen Walter playing Shanks. So during the course of the movie, Mr. X, who is Daniel Craig's character, has to move these pills. He's got to find a buyer for these pills. And so he goes up to Liverpool and meets with two North England drug dealers who are Trevor and Shanks. And Shanks is played by Stephen Walter. And they do this scene. Again, this is his only work in the entire movie, his only lines, is he stands there with a lollipop.
Yeah.
And he lays out to them the provenance of the pills which they are selling, which they themselves don't know. And everything he does in that scene, like he is so precise. And it's just an amazing little tour de force from a great actor.
It's interesting that Matthew Vaughn was the producer of the Guy Ritchie movies, because the Guy Ritchie gangster movies are similar in a way in the kind of like intricately plotted nature of the things, but extraordinarily different in another way, which is that visually, you know, Guy Ritchie is all flash. He's all here are clever little visual things that I'm going to do, and you are going to keep watching because it's interesting on the screen, right? And Matthew Vaughn does none of that, really. It's a very straightforward, I don't want to say,
It's beautifully shot. B-unit stuff is gorgeous to look at.
It's extremely well shot, but it's also extremely straightforward. It's not,
it's not showy.
There's nothing fancy here. There's nothing particularly, you know, special or showy or any of that stuff. It is efficiently and purposefully shot in a way that, again, the Guy Ritchie movies aren't. The Guy Ritchie movies are just are very, you know, in your face with what the style of the thing is. And this is more restrained and more a little more reserved, which I think, you know, plays into the whole Matthew Vaughn upper crust royalty, stiff upper lip type attitude that he brings to these pictures.
Victorino, you loved it, didn't you?
I gave it a BB plus. Because...
Are you fucking kidding me?
No, I'm not.
Have you seen it before? You'd seen it before, right?
Before. Yeah.
Look at the quadrants, Victorino.
I know. Well, here's the thing. Duration is an A. Violence is an A. Sex nudity is definitely A. Sienna Miller, that's an A plus. She gets an A plus for
so
that.
So how does it go down?
Plot gets an F and dragged down the... It weighed down the average. So it was like A and an F for plot. I've watched this
too
movie.
Too complicated.
I've
too
watched
complicated
this movie so many
for you.
Times, and I still don't understand what happened. I watched the movie this time with subtitles. I watched with the subtitles. I have questions.
I turned the subtitles on this time too because I was just I had to turn the volume down because I was watching, you know, with the kids.
That's the whole movie.
My one complaint about the plot. I do have one complaint about the plot is that I do think that the introduction of the Serbian warlords is like one step too many. Like,
these lot are wanted for mass murder.
Yeah, the whole dragon subplot I find to be
that's
like
the only part I think I understood, but okay. I have questions. These are real questions. This is not trolling.
Go ahead. But you know, I can answer all of them. Okay, I've seen this movie like 60 times.
Did they ever find Michael Gambon's daughter?
Yes, at the end of
Michael
the movie.
Michael Gambon has her.
Yeah. He sent her to Arizona. He says this at the end of the movie. That's not Sienna Miller.
Okay, just his daughter is Charlie, and Mr. Troop is the one who picked Charlie up from Brighton, and then they sent her to rehab in Arizona. Mr. Troop
is the...
There's
so many characters.
He's one of the soldiers.
Oh.
He is the head soldier for Michael Gambon's character.
I thought Daniel Craig's name was Kinky. I got confused.
No, Kinky was the boyfriend who of Charlie. Okay, never mind.
Michael Gambon, okay, by the
so
way,
the
has a perfect
found,
voice.
But we never see. He's great.
Absolutely perfect.
Extremely darkly tanned. Weird. I don't know what's going on there.
An enormous, enormous hands.
Yeah. Okay, so.
The scene where he puts his hands around, when they're on the rooftop, and he puts his hands around Daniel Craig's face.
Even the thing
and
is,
it, he almost touches his fingertips on the back. It's like an orangutan.
Even with the profanity, he's still Dumbledore to me. So Michael Gambon's daughter is found, but
Dumbledore is Eddie Temple to me.
Either way, two sides of the same coin. So she's found, but we don't see her. She's gone. So why did
she's not?
Why
she's,
did what?
Well, I mean, we see her once briefly in a flashback.
Okay, she's never in the movie except for her doing a line of coke.
So that was a false flag or whatever. Not a false flag. What's the word I'm looking for? It was like a red herring or something. It's like, you know what I'm saying? That Jimmy sends them on this mission, but it was a fake mission.
No, it wasn't a fake mission. It was to put him in the path of Eddie Temple.
To get killed or to be helped?
Yes.
Oh.
One or the other, to either have Eddie Temple kill him or for him to, if he found Charlie, listeners. So that he could then get leverage over Eddie because he wants to get the money back from Eddie. Right?
The money that he put into the African nation.
Oh, yes, right.
Bum, see, bum, bum. Even made him a member of the tribe.
That sound effect, that. Amazing. That was just amazing. Okay, so there's that, because I wasn't sure about that. And then who were the guys that they enlist to find Kinky and the girl?
Cody and Tiptoes.
Yes. Are they cops?
Yes, Cody and Tiptoes.
Or are they bad cops pretending to be? Are they undercover?
They're con men.
They're con men pretending to be cops.
They're con men. All they are is straight con men.
They're con men, but that scene at the end is a bit of a cheat.
It's a bit of a cheat.
I don't think those.
In the van? I couldn't even see their faces.
No. Because what happens? What happens is at the end they have like the British SWAT team chases Daniel Craig and the low level gangsters out of that warehouse, right? Just like chase them away. And then they come back, and instead of leaving with the pills to the these two guys, what are their names again?
Cody and Tiptoes.
Cody and Tiptoes. They steal the pills. Yeah?
No. So there are no cops. All of those cops, those are Cody and Tiptoes and a bunch of actors that they have recruited
to
run
this.
There are no police there.
Are you sure about that?
Positive.
Are you sure about that? Because
I am 100,000% sure. There are no cops. It is all Cody and Tiptoes the whole time. The whole thing is,
and so they're just putting on a show so Dragon can watch in the distance.
Correct, because they believe that Dragon is watching them. Interestingly enough, Cody, played by Dexter Fletcher, who went on to become a producer and director. He produced Bohemian Rhapsody and directed Rocket Man.
You know, one of them, I can't...
Again, this movie has more talent on screen than just about any movie
I've
ever made.
I can't remember which one is which, but one of them I recognize because he was in Band of Brothers, and he was a great role in Band of Brothers. And of course, playing an American. But of course, Tom Hardy was in Band of Brothers. There were a ton of Brits playing Americans in Band of Brothers. But that's where I recognized him from. Okay, see, there was confusion there. The guy who puts the shotgun in his mouth is not Crazy Larry.
No. Crazy Larry's
who is the guy who puts the shotgun in his mouth.
Just a random guy.
He's just one of the kids in the gang who Crazy Larry was.
Riding. Okay.
Against his will.
All right. Because
as Crazy Larry, gay.
For poof.
No, Crazy Larry was never gay. As he would say.
Yes, that's right. Okay, does Gene kill the guy who puts the shotgun in his mouth or no?
No, Gene kills Crazy Larry. This is so.
No, the guy who puts the shotgun in his mouth kills himself.
You see him die on screen.
You see him blow his brains out.
You know how it is. You're seeing things that aren't real, like in Under the Silver Lake, things that didn't happen. Maybe didn't happen. He's altering the story. Gene is altering the story. You know.
Let me interrupt your question for a moment, Victorino. Sonny, did you notice in this viewing that when Mr. X and Colm Meaney's character Gene are sitting and he's being told all this history, Daniel Craig says to him, "So one of the guys who was getting ridden killed Crazy Larry?" And Gene does this little thing where there's a tiny hitch. Yeah. He looks to the side and goes, "Yeah, probably."
And it was clearly
story. Again, there are so many little tells where it becomes odd the whole way along. Right. Everything really is set up.
How is Morty off the hook when the guy, they say, he comes out of his coma? Wouldn't he get out of his coma and then he would be in trouble because he'd ID him?
Because now he's not on the hook for a murder charge.
So he is, and what you find out in the novel, so this is one place where they have elided something that is in the novel. In the novel, they put together a bunch of money.
Yeah.
They put together a bunch of money and give it to Freddie to bribe him out of paying charges.
That was an assumption for me. Okay.
So this is yes.
Right. Can I get to the spoiler question now? Is this okay? I know the movie, for people who didn't see it.
It's a 16-year-old movie. There are no spoilers.
Ben Whishaw, right, who is Sydney?
Q.
Sydney?
The Lobster.
Yeah, isn't it funny?
Yes, plays Sydney.
He kills Daniel Craig. Is it his friends in the club who hired him to kill Daniel Craig?
No. Here's the real question.
Kill him on his own?
JBL. Here's the real question for JBL from Sonny. This is the actual. It's a good question.
What are you saying? What are you suggesting, Sonny?
Does Ben Whishaw kill Daniel Craig as payback for the Duke, or because he has stolen his girl?
Because he has stolen his girl.
But he does it in such a weird way where he says, I'm sorry, and then he leaves. So I felt like he was forced to do it.
Because Sydney is not a killer. Like, Sydney isn't... No, Sydney is this confusing. So they shot the movie with three endings. They shot it with an ending where there is no killing by Sydney, and Daniel Craig and Sienna Miller drive off into the sunset. They shot an ending, which they use in the movie, where he's killed, and they shot an ending where it's ambiguous, where Craig and Sienna Miller leave, but Sydney follows
them.
This
is still kind of ambiguous. Sure. You don't actually see that he's suffering. You know, maybe. I don't know.
But what this is it's part of the deeper message of the movie, which is that loyalty is the most important thing. Everybody in the movie who is loyal
survives. But also,
and the people who are being disloyal are the ones who die. Rubbing another man's rhubarb, disloyal.
But also the classic sort of, you can't get out. They won't let you out of this business.
They're not married.
Like Godfather 3. You can't get out. Nobody gets out.
No.
You can't go legit. He wants to go legit. Like
he, all right. I'm gonna dispute this because she is the one that is cheating on him. He, Daniel Craig's Mr. X, has no obligation not to be with Sienna Miller.
Yeah, he kind of does.
They're not married. They're not engaged.
You don't. They were screw dancing together. Somebody
they
else's
were,
girlfriend.
They were dancing at a club.
Did they know each other?
No, they were together.
Did they
she
know
and
each
Sydney
other beforehand?
Were,
the way they look at each other, was it strictly
in Sydney?
Sienna Miller. Daniel Craig.
Sienna Miller's character and Daniel Craig. No, they just meet in a club and she's
very suggestive.
You know.
It was primal. Yeah. It was primal the way they looked at the way she. I remember,
that,
by the
so
way.
This
yeah,
is,
okay, go ahead.
The way she is shot in that scene in the club is one of those things where once every 10 years, a director will shoot an actress in such a way that suddenly she looks like Helen of Troy. You know, yeah. Like for a moment, she is the most She's beautiful it. Woman on the That's face it. Of the earth. And it kind of like Emmanuel Baird does in Mission Impossible. She is shot. Brian De Palma shoots her like crazy.
Sure,
and I think this Vaughn does the same thing with Sienna Miller here. And I mean, look, she's a lovely actress and a very pretty girl. But
Factory
she has
girl.
Never and
Factory
never before
girl. See that movie.
And never will look like that again. And it's yeah. just because of the way he shot her there. And it's amazing.
Yeah. Good. Yeah.
In the club.
Zero Pinocchios.
In the club with the cigarette, sort
but
of like dancing
when she,
by herself.
Told him to hold your horses and I'll be right back. And but I remembered that from the last time. So when I'm watching it the other day, I already knew that I was going to be disappointed. And it's like, man, don't answer that door.
But it's funny.
It is a funny. It's a funny scene. It is. It's great.
Go ahead. Continue your questions,
Victoria. Okay, at the very end, last question. So Gamba, they take the drugs back. He takes it, but like, you know, what did you think was going to happen, the whole thing? And then they take it and they're left with nothing. But there's a brief change of scenery and you see a couple of dead guys in the van. What was that?
That's Mr. Troop, Michael Gambon, who
yeah.
died because X's revenge on Gambon is calling Trevor and Shanks. I'm sorry, Trevor
not,
and
not,
Shanks.
Not Michael Gambon. He didn't die.
No, but his guy, Mr. Troop. So the two guys up in Northern in Liverpool, Trevor and Shanks,
yes.
Daniel Craig calls them to tell them, so this guy took the pills. He screwed us out of the money.
Oh.
This is where they're going to be.
Okay.
Go get them. And so they
I
go
and... It's funny because I couldn't make out their faces or his face in that scene. Like I knew somebody was killed in blood.
I mean, Troop is dead on the hood of the car. It's
I
very clear.
Tell. They all look the same to me. I just...
These pasty Brits,
they
all look the same.
Check of the names. Okay, great. But again, but it's not. I've watched it, you know, several times, and even without understanding it, I still enjoy watching it. I just don't. I'm like Michael Clark Duncan in Green Mile when he watches the dancing scene. I just like.
So here is. Here is the reason that the truth is, it's not a very accessible movie. And that is because it is so heavy on Brit slang that to really pick up on what's going, you have to understand like how British people speak. You know, you've got to know what a Daily Mail reader is. Mm-hmm. Because there's a really funny joke in the beginning, in the very opening, when he talks about Daily Mail readings demonizing cocaine, and now they're his, you know, his best clients.
Yeah.
You've got to understand what a self-assessment is, which is paying tax or letting. You know, so they talk about geezers, grass, causers, the old firm, all of which are synonyms for police, mm-hmm. which people here might not know.
Yeah, you think geezer is an old person.
Well, grassing is specifically snitching.
Right. Yeah. Right. Or Jimmy was skint, mm-hmm. right? He talks about Jimmy was skint as a snitch. And so the whole movie is full of that stuff, and especially because the accents are so so pronounced and yep. so in keeping with regions.
Yeah.
So that means they
blue collar.
Somebody they have
are
kept
blue collars or working class accents.
Strong recommend to watch with subtitles. I like it's one of those movies that I think actually plays much better with subtitles.
Yeah. And it is a movie which I really do believe, as you said, Sonny, it improves upon repeated viewing. You know, the first time you watch it, it's a very good movie. But by like the third time you've watched it, it's great. It's yeah. the British Goodfellas, but better.
No.
And my God, it's funny too. Like the number of laugh out loud moments in it, which are never really jokes, but are funny jokes. You know, like when there's the scene where Gene is sitting cleaning his gun. And Gene, who is like this insanely violent psychopathic enforcer, is explaining what meditation is right, to Daniel right. Craig's character. He says, you know, meditation is when you concentrate the front of the mind on a mundane task so that the rest of your mind can find peace. And, you know, this is what I like to do to meditate. And Daniel Craig says to him, so you find peace with your guns. And it's really funny. It's, you know, these little moments.
I it's funny to see Daniel Craig playing a character who's not supposed to be good with guns, you know, and he tells
it's very
about
funny,
that.
Isn't it? But this is, I mean, so this is what I would say. It is one of these movies that actually spans multiple genres. It's a Brit gangster movie. It's a heist movie. It's also a con movie. It is, I think, the best business movie ever made. I mean, there's a moment when Michael Gambon's character says that the art of good business is being a good middleman. And that is like the truest thing you've mm-hmm. ever heard. This is the basis of everything in American capitalism. It is the basis of the entire tech revolution. You could sum up the success of Amazon, Facebook, and Google just in that one sentence. It's a movie about class divisions. And this is, again, the layer cake, right? So you have at the very top, Jimmy versus Eddie. Below that, you have Daniel Craig's character and Morty versus Jimmy. Below that, you have Freddy versus Morty. You even have the Serbs versus the English. The level of cultural disdain that the Serbs have for the Brits is hysterical throughout it. And there's also a real undercurrent here of the way in which the baby boom hates Gen X. And hates that Gen X is growing up and coming for their place in the world. And they are so determined to hold on to it that they're willing to kill their children, essentially, which is what Jimmy Price wants to do. So we know from the very, very first moment that we meet Jimmy Price, and the movie is in many ways about Jimmy. He says to Daniel Craig, he says, you know, what do you want in life? Do you want a shot at the title or a seat by the band? And when he says that, you know automatically that he knows the answer. He knows that Dan Craig's character is trying to walk away from all this. And he isn't going to let him because he's the boss and he's the baby boomer. And almost all the dynamic is set up by the conflict in generations. And it's amazing. I mean, the little commentaries on the grasping rich, one of my favorite tiny moments of it is that... So Eddie Temple, who is the richest person in the film, he has Mr. Troop go and kill Kinky, his daughter's junkie boyfriend. Why does he have him kill Kinky? Because he paid Kinky $5,000 to leave his daughter alone, and he is outraged that this guy took $5,000 right. and didn't hold up right. his end of the deal. This guy who owns Skyscraper, which, again, is something the rich do. You know, like the five, how dare the audacity of him to, you know, take my $5,000. It's, you know, Jimmy ratting out Daniel Craig's character for £10,000. It's amazing. Anyway, it's a movie about life. It's the I Ching. It's the best. Look, if you're going to rank the four best movies, first of all, it's undoubtedly the best movie of 2004. There is no
what was
dispute
the big movie? What won?
At all.
What was the big box office winner box of 2004? What was like best picture 2004?
Hold on.
Out of curiosity.
Hold on. Box office 2004. Shrek 2.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah.
Well, it was no Shrek 2. Layer Cake was no Shrek 2.
I think I would have understood Shrek 2 better. And what's his name was in that one? Yeah, Antonio Banderas, I think he was in Shrek 2. Yes, JVL.
So, best movie of 2004, hands down. And if you're going to... The four best movies of the 2000s, and again, I just don't think there's any serious argument about this, in some order are The Dark Knight, Fellowship of the Ring, Lost in Translation, and Layer Cake.
Are you saying that Layer Cake is better than The Dark Knight?
Don't make me choose between my two favorite children. Yeah, but those are the four best movies of the 2000s, and I don't see a way that anybody, especially not anybody whose last name rhymes with Maude Moritz, could possibly disagree with those.
What were your four again?
Dark Knight, Fellowship of the Ring, Lost in Translation, Layer Cake.
It's missing There Will Be Blood.
Fair.
Or possibly No Country for Old Men, one of the two.
I don't think it's missing No Country for Old Men. I think No Country for Old Men is the next decade.
No.
No? What year is No Country?
It was either 07 or 08.
I'm going to effort this while you guys
talk. I'll tell you what I'll talk about. Continue supporting restaurants in your community safely. There are thousands of restaurants open for delivery on DoorDash that need your patronage now more than ever. Support your favorite restaurants on DoorDash. DoorDash is the app that brings you food you're craving right now, right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app. Choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with new contactless delivery drop-off setting. With over 300,000 partners in the U.S., Puerto Rico, Canada, Australia, you could support your local go-tos or choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off at zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code SUBBEACON. That's $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code SUBBEACON. Don't forget, that's code SUBBEACON for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. The answer, JVL, is...
2007, Sonny is right. Can I throw a little bit of trivia at you here?
Yeah.
Do you recall the highest grossing movie of the year 2000? Don't look it up.
Highest grossing movie of the 2000. Year 2000.
Gosh. This will blow your mind.
Armageddon.
No, that was 98.
Mission 97? Impossible 2.
But not a surprise because everyone loved 1 so much, and then you'll see that 3 was...
Here's the crazy thing about this, though. Looking at the top grossing movies of each year of the 2000, Mission Impossible 2 is almost literally half of the second lowest grossing movie of the decade. So all the other movies are right at $1 billion for their gross, and Mission Impossible is $540 million. Isn't that crazy?
That's interesting. I mean, so I guess
2000 was a soft year.
2000 was a soft year, but I mean, what was 99? I mean, are we just looking at like the explosion of the
foreign market? Maybe
foreign market. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. I mean, Titanic grossed what, 2.1 billion in 97?
Yeah,
/ 98. So like,
but that was its own phenomenon.
That's all.
Any other thoughts?
Anyway, people should go. Anybody who hasn't seen Layer Cake should go see it. I'm really sad that you don't love it, Vic.
I like it.
But I'm gratified, Sonny, that you didn't try to destroy me today with my favorite movie. I was worried that you were going to come in and...
No. Why would I do... Why would I do that? I like the movie a great deal. I mean, it's like, I don't say things I don't mean, JVL.
What?
That's the thing. That's the thing everyone needs to understand about me.
I still don't understand.
I never say anything I don't mean.
I still
mean.
Don't understand that about you.
On some level, an
enigma. I was going to say that it's funny because the earworm that I've had since yesterday is that Duran Duran song.
Oh, Ordinary World, right?
it's a funny match. It's great. That is a beatdown, you know.
Isn't that a great use of score? This whole score, Gimme Shelter.
I always think Gimme Shelter is over. It's been done to death. So I mean, save yourself some money if you for a person who's doing a movie. And pick a different song. Or pick a different Rolling Stones song, for that matter.
The rest of the score is very good, though. Like, not the actual soundtrack, but the score. Yeah. Like, the ambient music underneath it is just fantastic.
There's some great scenes in the opening throughout. Of this movie, by the way.
Like, whatever track it is that is playing under Daniel Craig after he commits the murder is just perfect. Yeah. Like, it just, like...
Okay, so moving right along, how about some corrections and shout-outs? Sonny Bunch.
I have many shout-outs. I need to, hold on, pull up my list of thank yous. Again, the sub beacon slash substandard listeners have been very, very generous in this my time of crisis and need. After the flood of liquor, there was a flood of board games. Here are some of the special names to call out. I'm sorry, hold on, I have to pull it up. Grant Addison, Tanya McKenna, Shannon, Tom Abella, who kind of spearheaded this whole thing, says he has no idea if this was run by JVL or not, but Shannon gets a special shout out here. Thomas Lassie, Matt Roberts, and Rick Licari. Let's see what else. A listener named Cameron McVeigh brought a pie over to my house, a delicious, delicious apple pie.
Cameron McVeigh lives near you. That's really funny.
Yeah.
I see him on Twitter. Oh, that's very funny.
Jedi Mama sent over a package of books for the kids, which was
Jen
very nice.
So Jen
is the best. Thank you, Jen. The kids love that. Dan, a friend of the show, Dan,
he sent a
frozen goose, which is in my freezer right now. I'm going to have
confit.
Some folks over.
You're going to make some confit, Sonny.
Well, it's
I'll help
smoked.
You with that.
It's
okay. I'll come over and help.
I think
anyway.
It, okay. Friend of the show, KSA, sent a cocktail kit, which is, I haven't had it yet, but looking at the recipe, it calls to mind a drink called The Smoke
at PX.
What's the seafood place? Fiolamare. Fiolamare.
Wow.
So if you're ever at Fiolamare, get a smoke. Ben, who lives around here, lives near me in Dallas, brought over a bottle of bourbon. It was funny. I was actually on the phone with JVL. I was on a Zoom call with JVL when he came up to the porch and handed it off, which was great. But yeah, anyway, thank you so much to everyone. I feel bad, Tom, because I have not actually played the board games yet. But we're going to get around to that, I promise. I don't know. I hope I really appreciate again. I really appreciate everybody thinking of me and sending nice, you know, well wishes and all that. As everything in Dallas kind of crashes around me, it's fantastic. It's good to know.
Okay, thank you, Sonny. That's all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments. Tweet us at SonnyBunch, at Victorino Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Just type in Subbeacon at a podcast. We are there. Leave a review. Tell your friends. Until next time.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Sorry.
So what's going on?
I don't have anything.
Okay, no. Sonny. I'll just throw this out then. I'll just throw this out. You know what I watched recently? It was on Amazon with my son, Generation War. And this is like the German version of Saving... They call it German version of Band of Brothers. Not really. It's more soap opery. And it's called... The original is called Unsere Mutter, Unsere Väter, und Our Mothers, Our Fathers. And it's five friends, one of whom is Jewish, and one of whom is an officer in the Wehrmacht, the other one's a younger brother, a girl who wants to be a nurse, and the other girl who wants to be like a singer. And the girl, the German girl, is dating the Jewish guy. And five friends in 1941, before they all get split up and go in different directions, let me just say it crushes the quadrants, including plot, because I know how it ends. It is really quite amazing. And if you have Amazon, watch it, Generation War.
So it's like an R-rated Swing Kids?
Yes, it's all Eastern Front. Well, they do get in trouble for the swing music, of course, but it is crazy, unexpected twists. It's also very soap opery in a German way. And it reminded me, when I lived in Germany and Austria, I used to watch a lot of the German soaps because it helps with the language. And I would talk to the Germans about it later. I'd be like, oh, well, you know, when I lived there, there was one called Good Times, Bad Times, Gute Zeiten, Schlechte Zeiten. And they're like, oh, no, yeah, that's a great one, popular. And then I said, yeah. And then I said, I watched this other one called Maria Hoff. That was great. And I remember they stopped and they looked at me and they said, the only ones who watch that show are like 13-year-old girls. And I said, oh.
I'm sure it's fine.